one of the most contagious viruses on Earth.
Today is Saturday, April 13th. Have an idea of which virus she was just talking about there? We're starting our conversation today with what you need to know about measles and why you should care about a recent uptick in cases, whether you're vaccinated or not. And later, a different virus, also making headlines right now, is near the top of the list for what could cause the next pandemic. Our guest today is Dr. Caitlin Jedalina, best known for her public health newsletter, Your Local Epidemiologist, that helps translate ever-evolving science to millions of people. She's, of course, an epidemiologist. She also co-founded the Health Trust Initiative and is a senior scientific advisor to several government and nonprofit agencies, including the CDC. And she's received multiple awards for her work, including a Medal of Honor from the Department of Health and Human Services. In all, today's conversation talks about four different viruses in the U.S. right now and what the average person needs to know about each one to stay healthy and safe. Welcome, welcome to the Newsworthy Special Edition Saturday, when we sit down with a different expert or celebrity every Saturday to talk about something in the news. Don't forget to tune in every Monday through Friday for our regular episodes, where we provide all the day's news in 10 minutes. I'm Erica Mandy. It's now time for today's Special Edition Saturday. Dr. Caitlin Jedalina, thank you for joining us here on the Newsworthy once again.
Thanks for having me.
We have a lot to get to today, but I do want to start with the recent increase in measles cases across the U.S. First, would you call this an outbreak? And how concerning do you think it is really?
Yeah, so measles is certainly coming in hot in 2024. And so we are starting to see in the United States and across the globe an increase in the number of sparks, which means an increase in the number of outbreaks. And the reason this is a concern is because the more embers we have, the more likelihood that these embers are going to find unvaccinated pockets and really spread like wildfire.
And when you say outbreak, explain what that means.
An outbreak, at least how we define it in the United States, is three or more cases of the same transmission line. So, for example, we know that one person spread it to two other people. And so this is the minimum definition for an outbreak in the United States.
And so a lot of people don't really have experience with measles. Explain the symptoms, but also the big thing about it is just how contagious it is, right?
It is incredibly contagious. It is probably, a lot of us don't like to talk in absolute terms, but like one of the most contagious viruses on Earth, which means that one infected person on average infects about 18 other people if they're unvaccinated. And the problem is that this virus can make people very sick. You're right that we don't really know about measles because of our vaccines have worked so well. But people without immunity, about one in five who get infected will be hospitalized. And about one in 20 will develop pneumonia. And then one in 1,000 will develop encephalitis, which is basically inflammation of the brain. And people die. One to three kids, for example, out of 1,000 will die from measles. The other thing that we're starting to learn, and this is more recently we've learned in this scientific literature, is that measles can cause immune amnesia. So for example, if you get measles and you survive, you can lose your immune protection against flu or against chickenpox. So you're kind of starting over again, which can also be incredibly dangerous to people.
And, you know, to your point, vaccines have worked. The measles were officially declared eliminated from the U.S. in the year 2000. But remind our listeners, what does eliminated actually mean? And then are they considered not eliminated now that we're seeing these outbreaks?
We have not lost our elimination status. However, in 2019, we came extremely closely. We had not necessarily a lot of sparks or embers like we're seeing this year. We had a really big outbreak among the Orthodox Jewish community in New York. And that outbreak lasted 10 and a half months. And so we were very close to losing elimination status if it continued to go on for 12 months.
So most people have heard that routine childhood vaccination rates went down during the pandemic, including for the vaccine that protects against measles. But what's the latest on that? Have those vaccination rates come back up at all now that the pandemic is, you know, pretty much over?
Unfortunately, no. We are continuing to see a decline in routine vaccinations. And the reasons are really complex of why this is happening. One was because, yeah, people missed their well child check visits during the pandemic. They didn't want to go to the doctors, and that still hasn't kept up. The second is we're just seeing a different landscape play out in the United States with an increase towards individualism and an increase in vaccine exemptions for non-medical reasons. There's only 5 states that don't allow non-medical exemptions.
For schools you're talking about.
Yeah, for schools. And then the third reason is there's just been a really recent and dramatic decline in trust in institutions overall. And this is supercharged by mis and disinformation. And so it's a big problem, but a complex problem that we really need to pay attention to.
If someone thinks they have immunity, like they, how do people really find out if they or their children have had the vaccine and are up to date on all of that?
They can get a test. At this point, though, it's not recommended that everyone goes gets a test to check if they have immunity or not. I think this is most important among those over 65 that did not get a measles vaccine, especially if they're going through chemotherapy, should definitely check their immunity levels.
And if parents have opted out, they can still go back and say, okay, let's get my kid the MMR vaccine.
Yeah, it's certainly never too late to go get it. It is especially strongly recommended among those that are traveling internationally. But yeah, it's never too late. And it's even not too late if they get exposed to a measles outbreak. They can get a vaccine within 72 hours, and this will help with their outcomes. So this is the first line of defense against measles, and it's a very safe line of defense as well.
For somebody who has had the vaccine, do they need to worry? And like, why does this matter to them?
Those that are vaccinated are very, very well protected. However, as a mom, I would certainly be concerned if I had a child under 12 months or that wasn't fully vaccinated yet because of the vaccine schedule, and concerned if you're a pregnant person, right? And unfortunately, with infectious diseases, what the person does next to you directly impacts you, including their vaccination status. And so this has to be a community-led effort. And we're unfortunately starting to see that crumble, which is disheartening.
So speaking of vaccines, I do want to touch on the RSV vaccine. It's fairly new. There's for the elderly and pregnant women. Because on one hand, I actually got feedback from a few listeners who were pregnant when they first heard about the RSV vaccine on our podcast last year. And they told us that they seemed to know more about it than even their doctor's office when they went in and asked about getting it while they were pregnant. And they were really thankful that they were able to protect their babies in that way. But then we also have since reported that some vaccines were given incorrectly, even at doctor's offices and pharmacies, to pregnant people and children. So help explain what happened, why there was so much confusion, and then we can talk about what's the latest. Has this been figured out?
This was the first season that we've ever had an RSV vaccine or monoclonal antibodies for children. And so the rollout was incredibly messy and slow. We didn't have a good sense on demand. And so a lot of people were looking for it and couldn't find it. And unfortunately, that also means that patients are getting educated kind of at the same time that physicians are getting educated. That results in a whole lot of confusion. I hope that this gets smoothed out even better this upcoming season, because the challenge or the problem with all of this is that vaccine uptake was just incredibly low this fall, which is very disappointing given how much it can protect pregnant people as well as newborns.
And part of the confusion came from the fact that there were like 3 different versions of either vaccines or treatment or like a preventative antibody, right? So certain ones were supposed to go to certain people, and that's what caused some of the confusion.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's all sorts of vaccines and protections put in place. So one is the pregnant person vaccine. The second is those older have 2 options for a vaccine. And then, yeah, you have these monoclonal antibodies, which are shots for those under 8 months old. And then you put on all these COVID vaccines and routine vaccinations and flu vaccines. I mean, we're asking a lot from not only patients, but also our doctor's offices. And unfortunately, because of that, there's going to be mistakes that happen. I think that the best thing people can do is advocate for themselves. You can double check the label on the vaccine vials before they give it to you and go from there.
Yeah, being knowledgeable from conversations like these can help, you know, arm you with the information when you go in to kind of be your best advocate. But all of that said, I know that, you know, you always like to point out that that's like a very small number of people that had a mistake, and the vast majority were protected properly.
Not only protected properly, but like really well protected. We just got real world data in saying these vaccines are incredible at protecting people. And so we really need to work on how to get better access and education around these vaccines for next fall.
All right, still ahead, we get an update on COVID-19, including some new recommendations about what to do when you get sick. And we are talking about that virus that's on the watch list for the next global pandemic. We're talking about the so-called bird flu. What's happening with it now, specifically on farms, and what epidemiologists are watching for next. But first, a break for our sponsors. It is spring now, and I thought it was interesting to learn that our skin goes through a big transition between seasons, not just on the surface, but at the cellular level. So yes, protecting our skin against the sun's UV rays is important, but so is nurturing our skin even beyond that. OneSkin's products actually work from the inside out with their scientifically proven peptide called OS1. And I love when there's good data to back a product up. In a third-party 12-week clinical study performed by third-party research organization, OS1 Face, which I use every morning and night, by the way, was clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier, improve skin health markers, and diminish visible signs of aging. Wrinkles were diminished in 87% of users. And I can share that my personal experience aligns. I can truly tell the difference in how my skin looks and feels after just a few months of using it twice a day. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code NEWSWORTHY at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with the code NEWSWORTHY. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, so please be sure to support our show and tell them we sent you. Help your skin stay younger and healthier for longer with OneSkin. This episode is also brought to you by Honeylove. Now that spring is here, it is not only time to spring clean your closet, but it's also that time of year where you may have some weddings or special events coming up. And I'm here to tell all the ladies listening, do yourself a favor and stock your closet with Honeylove. Whether it's finding that just right bra for every day or getting shapewear that makes you feel great in a dress, Honeylove has it all. There's a reason our executive producer chose Honeylove shapewear on her wedding day above all the other brands she tried. And now I have the same in my closet. Plus, you all know I'm all about their breathable, versatile legging 2.0. My favorite leggings, hands down. Whether you're wearing Honeylove's shapewear and bras or their leggings and loungewear, you will love how they feel, how they function, and how they look. Treat yourself to the best bras, shapewear, leggings, and more, and save 20% off at honeylove.com/newsworthy. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/newsworthy. And after you purchase, they ask you where you heard about them. So please support our show and tell them we sent you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it. Okay, now back to my conversation with Dr. Caitlin Jedalina. So at least briefly, I know a lot of people are kind of tired of talking about COVID-19, but I do want to get just a quick update. What is the state of COVID-19 today?
So this past winter was a really big and needed test because it was the first winter out of the COVID-19 emergency. And we were really curious how COVID-19 would stack up to flu and RSV. And what we saw was that COVID-19 still causing more severe disease, i.e. hospitalizations and death, than flu or RSV, and by a pretty big margin. So COVID-19 is definitely still here. It peaked at around Christmas or New Year's, like we've seen the previous 3 years. And it is currently in a downfall across all regions of the United States. We expect a wave to probably come in summer again, like we've seen every time when people head indoors because of the heat. And so this may kind of be our new normal of these waves of COVID-19 infections, particularly impacting those that are not up to date on their vaccines.
And the latest is still basically you're getting an annual booster shot. Unless you're elderly, then maybe you're getting an additional one as well.
Yeah, it looks like that's where we're going to be kind of heading into, is that an annual COVID-19 shot, just like the flu, every fall for everyone. And then those over 65 will likely be recommended to have two vaccines, one in fall and one in spring.
And last thing about COVID, I mean, one kind of bigger change that happened last month is the CDC lifted specific COVID isolation guidelines. So now people are pretty much advised in the same way as, you know, flu and other things, that stay home if you feel sick. And I believe you wrote in your newsletter that the new guidance is reasonable. Can you tell us more about that?
I think that it's reasonable because usually the typical person doesn't know what virus is causing them to feel like crap. And it really doesn't matter if you have COVID, RSV, or flu. The number one thing you need to do if you have symptoms is stay home, period.
Before we wrap up, I do want to talk about the so-called bird flu. I remember, you know, when eggs got really expensive back in 2022 because of a really bad outbreak among chickens. But now, from what you've written, bird flu is back. What's going on?
So beginning of 2022, and then into 2023, like you mentioned last year, the U.S. experienced the largest and longest outbreak in U.S. history of avian flu among birds. Now, we've then started since then, when eggs were extremely expensive and hard to find, we've been detecting avian flu in mammals worldwide. So seals, bears, mountain lions, fox, and now the latest news is in cows. And the reason this is concerning is, one, we have never really seen a mammal-to-mammal transmission of avian flu. And so this suggests that the virus is slowly but surely mutating. And every time we give it the ability to mutate, the more chances it has to mutate to infect humans.
And did I see that one person is potentially infected? A human is infected?
Yeah. And so the news we got in early April was that a farmer that was working with infected cows did get infected. They had very mild symptoms, inflammation of the eye. And that's not surprising. We've seen that in infected people before. And I think that it would not be surprising if there were more human cases and people that had direct contact with cows or chickens or really any animal that is infected. What we do not want to see, and which we have not seen yet, is the ability for this virus to transmit from human to human. So for example, in the latest case, we don't think that there's any other human context that became infected from this farmer, which is really great news. That is certainly something that would start a pandemic. We're certainly paying attention. Avian flu is, if you ask any epidemiologist, probably the top five concerns for the next huge pandemic.
If this is a concern that it could become a pandemic, are there already people working on a possible vaccine in case this does happen? Or, you know, what's happening behind the scenes as we're watching this avian flu?
We have a small stockpile of H5N1 vaccines. We certainly do not have enough for every single American. The good news is, though, we do have, for example, a great supply of Tamiflu or antivirals that we could use against this. But other things that we're doing is, yeah, watching if the virus mutates to become better adapted, trying to track how this is spreading around cows, and then, yeah, paying attention to how it impacts humans, not only our immunity with the flu vaccine, the normal flu vaccines we get, which may or may not provide some sort of protection, but also what is this new vaccine? How quickly can we create it? What are those pipelines of manufacturing, and how do we get it out quickly in case we need to? And those are processes that the government is certainly thinking through right now.
And to be clear, people don't need to worry about getting it through cow milk or chicken meat or anything like that.
Yeah, right. So at this point, the risk to the average person is basically nil, unless you're working with wild animals or birds or cows. The milk in our grocery store, for example, is still very safe. And that's because milk from sick cows, or even meat, right, from sick cows or chickens, is not allowed to enter the commercial supply. And milk specifically is pasteurized, right, which is a major safety step in killing pathogens, including influenza virus. The only kind of caveat to this is that there's a new kind of nutrition wave of drinking raw milk, and that's unlikely to be safe. And it's certainly not recommended to drink raw milk anyway due to other health risks.
As we wrap up, what should listeners know or take away right now or over the next few months, you know, as we enter spring, then summer, and then prepare for fall again, or just, you know, an overall takeaway?
I think my biggest takeaway is try to find a trusted voice, a trusted messenger to know when you need to take new precautions or not. And yeah, join us on this discovery ride of scientific information around all of these viruses that are happening around us, because there are certainly things we can do to protect ourselves.
Be sure to get more public health facts, information, and analysis from Caitlin Gentilina through her email newsletter, Your Local Epidemiologist. And of course, our team here at The Newsworthy is always working to be your trusted messenger, as we talked about, whether it's about public health issues or other things in the news. So join us every Monday through Friday for our fast, fair, fun, and factual 10-minute news roundups. Plus, every Saturday, we have these special editions for you on a different topic each week. So we'll be back on Monday with our next regular news roundup. Until then, have a great weekend.